Welcome back, everybody, to Pull Hook Golf, the podcast. I'm your host, Matt Cook, and today we have an awesome guest, another PGA Tour caddy. David Gase is on with us, who is the current caddy of Q School winner Harrison Endicott. But before we do dive in today's episode, which is all going to be about the caddy today, we do want to give a special thanks to Swanee's Golf. Everybody, go to swanees.co, use that promo code that we have, which is PullHookGolf25, for 25% off your entire order. Got the Swanee's gear on today, just like always on the show. And I mean, if you've noticed, I've worn these hoodies quite a bit. This is the Camden hoodie. It is the best thing that I just love it from Swanee. So once again, use promo code PullHookGolf25 at checkout for 25% off your entire order. All right, here we go, David. Let's get right into it, man. Let's talk a little bit to get started about your golf journey. So not necessarily caddying, but tell me a little bit about how you got into the game of golf and where golf has led you in terms of playing.
You know, I started playing when I was young, probably 7, 8. My dad was a big golfer, but he wasn't in the business or anything. And once I started showing some interest and got kind of decent at it, he got into the golf business, so it'd be cheaper and easier for me to do it. So I played up until junior golf until college and went to North Alabama, played 2.5 years there. Didn't do too great with academics, but I still try to play competitively a little bit. I haven't probably in a year though, but I've played 8 USGA events. I've made the quarters of the US Mid-Am. I've done some things, but nothing. I tried to turn pro, didn't work out, and then that's my quick story of golf.
Yeah, and doing a little bit of prep work ahead of time, I did notice you are quite the player and have played in quite a few USGA events, so that's pretty cool that you've had that experience. Now, I will tell you, I was the same way when I went to Grand Canyon University. It's always a mouthful to get that one out. I wasn't heavy in the school. Don't tell anybody, but I don't know how I got a degree. But they ended up giving it to me anyways. I guess the power of the golf program, so to speak. So I feel you there. Now, how far did you ever try to play mini tour, stuff like that? Or was it always kind of staying in the amateur ranks?
I never had the mindset I was good enough. So I kind of just stuck with the am stuff because I was pretty realistic with my own game. And I worked at Quail Hollow for almost 10 years.
Terrible place.
And they afforded me awful place. And they afforded me the opportunity to play in practice. And I would travel with members and play these cool clubs. And it just never really thought to turn pro. And then right a couple years before COVID, somebody made an offer to pay for me to go to Latin Q school. And I had a bunch of funding behind me had I made it, but I missed by 2 twice. And COVID hit and opportunities came and opportunities left because of COVID, and I kind of lost interest for a bit. Okay. Just with playing golf with foam and cups and cups raised, and just wasn't that fun. So I kind of stopped. But in between that, COVID and a couple years prior, I'd caddied for a friend in the US Mid-Am, and he went on to win. So that was kind of my start into it. So that kind of helped me stop playing a little bit, or encouraged me to stop playing a little bit, but I still try to play as much as I can.
It's funny. Whenever I have a caddy on the show, I'm always kind of listening for the demeanor, because I'm like, every caddy that's on the PGA Tour that I've spoken with, interviewed, or had on as a co-host, I'm just like, man, you guys have a vibe that it's just like chill, calm, like, and those end up being the really good ones, because you have that vibe that kind of brings the player kind of back down to reality in pressure situations and so forth. So I get it. But so you end up caddying for this gentleman, and then from there winning an amateur tournament, or what did you say the amateur was?
He won the US Mid-Am, so it got him in like Masters and US Open. And so I dove head first into the caddy, and my first professional event was the Masters.
That's insane. Now, how did that lead to you becoming a PGA Tour caddy?
So, I mean, so you had some success, and I still played after that. I still played mid-am events and am events. And like I said, I went to Q school twice. And when COVID hit, Johnson Wagner's a member at Quail where I was working, and his caddy had just left for another player, I believe was the situation. I was like, hey, I'll go caddy for you. And he's like, yes. So for my first tournament for a tour player was in the middle of COVID. So that's kind of how I got into the PGA Tour aspect of it. And I couldn't have picked a better start. It was with a veteran that I didn't have to do much. I just kind of carried the clubs and kept him company.
Now, I know a lot of people are going to get upset for me for just skipping over the fact that your first event was the Masters. So I do have to go back because I'm like, yeah, we kind of need to talk about this for a second. First tournament at the Masters. Now, had you ever been to Augusta National before that?
I'd been very fortunate. I'd been a few times,
Okay.
living 2 hours away, and I'd been a ton, actually.
There
I
you
was there
go.
for,
So
yeah,
there wasn't the
I was
shell
very
shock
fortunate
of
as a
being
kid.
there for the first time, right?
No, and fortunately too, like I'm sure you know, when once you qualify for the Masters, they give you a certain amount of trips there to play and practice, whatever. And that was the first time I'd been outside of a tournament week, so I did get to go check it out prior to the Masters, which was nice.
That's pretty cool. Now, being on that first tee box at the Masters in your white caddy bib, how terrifying is that? Or let me put it this way, how much pressure or nerves are there just being a caddy on that first tee?
Honestly, the most nerves I felt, we were on the putting green one morning. It might have been Tuesday, and Tiger rolled up with LaCava, and I'm like, I've obviously seen Tiger play up close and personal, and he walks out on the green. There's just an aura about him, especially when you're a big fan. And the kid I was caddying for, Kevin O'Connell, I was like, hey, let's see if he wants to play a practice round. He's like, I'm not asking him. Why don't you ask LaCava? And I'm like, I'm not asking LaCava. So that was the most nervous and kind of scared I was. But on the first tee, it really isn't that bad. You kind of, it's such a cool place. You kind of have a calmness to you. I don't know. It's a weird feeling. I thought I'd be nervous, but I was not.
All good. That's it to me. I'm just like, man, putting myself in your shoes, and there's an aura to it, right? That, I mean, just the environment and everybody's around you on that first tee box. It's just, I've been to the Masters. I've been lucky enough to be down there for a few years, and during the Jordan Spieth era of him losing to Bubba, then winning, and then essentially losing because of hole number 12. So
Yep.
I'd been there for that. What ended up, so you got your break into being a PGA Tour caddy for Johnson Wagner. Where did it go from there? So how'd you end up getting on Harrison's bag?
So Johnson went pretty much a full season with him. He was playing off, I want to say he was off 126 to 150 category, which limited starts. And then the second year I worked for him, he was playing off past champion. And we had a couple starts, and he was starting to play a little better. He'd been working hard in his game, and leading up to Puerto Rico, he went down to Colusa Pines in Naples, Florida, and he injured his knee in flipping a golf cart, which,
You hate to see it.
for all intents and purposes, stopped his career. So in the middle of July, he basically told me, he's like, "Hey, I'm not going to play much. My brother's going to caddy for me." So I reached out to a friend of mine who's an agent, Matt Broom, and he happened to be Harrison's agent. And he hooked me up with him in July of 21, I guess it was.
Okay.
So we had maybe seven events left on Korn Ferry, and he finished the season strong, got his card, and then just kind of stuck with him.
That's pretty sweet. Now, getting on the Korn Ferry Tour, how different is it than being on the PGA Tour?
It is night and day. It's you don't want to be out there. As a player, I think they'll say as well, you're playing that tour to get off that tour. And I think it's kind of the same mindset as a caddy. You're trying to either hopefully take somebody to the tour and they bring you with them, or take a step down with confidence in somebody. And I mean, it's tough because a lot of, I mean, caddies are very expendable, so you could get a guy to the tour and you might not have a job 2 weeks later.
That's so true. I mean, I've had Bobby Brown and so legendary PGA Tour caddy for Dustin Johnson, and his son Daniel Gregory caddies on the Korn Ferry Tour and has been there for a while. And each player that he had coming up through that he was on the bag for all their Korn Ferry Tour wins, all of a sudden they make it onto the PGA Tour and they're like, hey man, I'm going with Lance Bennett, I'm going with X, Y, and Z caddy. So Pearson Cootie's his first guy that he is, that Pearson is bringing him up into the PGA Tour. So it's interesting, but that carousel of caddies, and it goes around and around and around, it feels like, to where guys, you know, if they start playing poorly, they're like, hey, I'm gonna need to make a change, I want this, I'm looking for that. Or even if they start playing really well, like, even look at Ludvig Åberg, all of a sudden stealing away Tom Kim's caddy. So that type of stuff happens too. So this caddy world, it is crazy on the PGA Tour. But I do want to take a step back. I want to ask you about Q School, especially this year where your guy won it. Harrison Endicott wins Q School. But it was a crazy Q School to begin with all the weather and everything and not being able to finish. So one of the days got rained, or the final round got rained out. But what was it like caddying through Q School? Was this your first time caddying through it all?
It was, and honestly, leading into it, it was a weird situation because he had finished 138 on the FedEx Cup last year. So in our minds going into it, we had 126 to 150 status, which in previous last year would have got 24 starts. So we had the mindset, hey, we're still going to get 15 to 20 starts. Let's go out and kind of play free. And hindsight, I mean, it was a huge week, and it was good because he went into it with the attitude, I'm the best player in this field. They've never had status. I have status currently. What do I have to lose? Why not go out there and just prove that I'm the best player out here? And for 4 days, five, he had that attitude. He dominated, really. It was never in doubt.
It wasn't. I mean, he had the 54-hole lead, and then final round gets rained out. I mean, and the clubs behind me here, Sawgrass Country Club. Now, was Sawgrass Country Club, was that the final round?
No, Ballycorset at TBC. Okay,
gotcha. So this was one of the rounds, though, right? There was two and two?
Yeah, and it was. Okay. And Sawgrass, as you know, it's brutal. It's Sawgrass Country Club's as hard as it gets, especially when it's windy.
That's for sure. So going through a rain delay in Q School with all that. Now, granted, he had status already, kind of just wanted to go out, prove himself out there as the best player in Q School. But how do you, keep him entertained, so to speak, through an entire sitting on the lead, by the way? So not only is he sitting on the lead, but now he's got an entire day where it's rained out, you got to wait till the next day in order to play and finish up to see if you can win it. I mean, what's your job there as the caddy?
So we were staying together that week, and we've become pretty good friends. And so that day was full of Family Guy and South Park sitting at the house. I mean, it wasn't great weather. We thought about going to Top Golf, and I was like, dude, we don't want to hit golf shots. It's a day off. We're not doing anything. Then we did some lunch and we ate at the same restaurant every night for dinner too. So,
superstitious at all, huh?
typically no, but that week it was easy to get to. It was good food. I mean, it was, why change the recipe if it's working?
Definitely not. Now, what was the meal of choice at that restaurant every night?
So it was sushi every night, this restaurant called Oku, in Jacksonville Beach.
That is risky.
So funny story, the only we actually did not eat there one night, and the reason is, so we get there like 4:55, the place opens at 5, doors are unlocked, walk in, we're like, hey, are y'all open yet? And they're like, no, not yet, 5 minutes. We're like, okay, can we just sit at the bar and wait? And they're like, no, you need to sit outside. And we're like, no. And it's raining, and I was like, no, we're gonna go somewhere else, thank you though. Sit outside in the rain.
Yeah, no. Just let us come in, grab a drink at the bar. Jeez. They lost business that night. Yeah. Something other than outside in the rain. That sounds terrible. So obviously you did something right with watching South Park and Family Guy and going to the same restaurant every day, because shit, you guys end up going out. And I mean, he showed that he was the best player out there. And that final round was not easy. I mean, that was a drenched golf course, and there was a lot of wind, as I recall.
Yeah, it was. I mean, it blew probably 20 all day. And he's an Australian kid. He plays in the wind, and when he's playing well, he's as good a ball striker as there is, and he hits a lot of flush shots. So it's playing in the wind, I feel like he's in an advantage usually. And basically, we got to the first tee, and I was like, why don't we treat this round like Tiger Woods in his prime? We hit every shot to 20 feet. They have to chase you. They're going to make mistakes. If we don't make any mistakes, they can't beat you. And the whole day, he kept hitting it to 20 feet, and when he hit it crooked, he would chip it to a foot and tap it in. And I mean, it was pretty flawless. I was very impressed with his final round game there.
One of the toughest things to do is to close out a tournament when you have a big lead. Talked about
Absolutely.
This numerous times on this podcast, that sometimes can be more daunting than falling asleep or going to bed with a one-shot lead, because you know you need to go out there and play, versus trying to hang on, right? That tends to be the entire momentum killer, is when you just go out there to hang on, where it's awesome that you created that game within a game or a tournament within a tournament of, hey, let's go out there, let's put it to 20 feet on every single hole, make them chase. And I love that, because you actually gave him a challenge of what to do rather than just trying to hang on.
Yeah, and I don't know if you played the Valley course or not, but there's trouble everywhere. So it'd be really easy to start seeing yourself go sideways.
Especially in that kind of wind, too. Do you imagine all of a sudden you're not hitting it so solid, and all of a sudden that wind starts playing a big factor? Shit, I wouldn't want to be in that situation. That's why I don't play anymore.
Exactly.
I've called it quits finally for good. About to turn 40, and I'm like, you know, maybe I'll give it one last shot. And then I got COVID at the beginning of the year, and it ended up being long COVID. And I'm like, no, I couldn't even go and like swing a golf club to practice. I'm just like, too damn old for this, man. These guys are too damn good. Then everybody on tour this year is just absolutely crushing it in terms of new names popping up. Guys are just playing unbelievable golf. And that's one of the cool things to see, is that we have this new kind of influx of talent that's coming up and through the PGA Tour. You guys, one of them too, which it's just awesome to see and awesome to get some of these fresh new names. Now, a lot of fans don't feel the same way about it. They're like, I want to see my Ricky Fowler. I want to see my Jordan Spieths of the world up at the top of the leaderboard. And I understand that aspect as well. But I do want to ask you, I mean, have you seen any, and I'm not going to get on a soapbox here, because a lot of people know how I feel about the PGA Tour and promotion of players and building them up and so forth. But did you see any type of buildup around Harrison from winning Q School?
Not really. I mean, because he had already been out there a year. If you talk to a lot of people that know him, he's kind of had the next up-and-comer status since he was a kid. Because, he was a world beater in amateur golf. He junior golf leading into amateur golf, he was a world beater. And I think he was maybe two or three in the world in amateur rankings, and turned pro pretty quickly. But yeah, there was no real buzz around him after winning Q School, but I think that's mainly because he had a year off. I don't know.
Yeah.
I mean, he had already played a year.
Got it. Now, what is this conditional status like? Because, and granted, he doesn't really, I mean, would you call it conditional status with winning Q School? I know it's the first time they have allowed the top five guys to make it back onto the PGA Tour, because it used to just be for a 10-year stretch or so. I was talking about this with Kevin Streelman. He didn't even realize that this year five guys were basically getting their PGA Tour cards from Q School, because it's been so long, you would just go and play on Korn Ferry Tour. But what type of status has he been given for winning Q School?
Well, so they tell him he's full status when he graduate from Q School. And typical year, like last year, I think there were 50 cards, 25 from the season and then 25 from Korn Ferry Finals. And I think we were 41 coming off of a Korn Ferry. And like, obviously you have the fall at the start of the season, so it made things different. But you would get Sony for sure. you'd get pretty much everything except waste management at the beginning of last year. This year, we were nowhere close at Sony. I think we were 10th alternate. Obviously, we were nowhere close to any of the signature events because you had to play your way in. We didn't get waste management. It wasn't even, I mean, we were 30th alternate. And then
Jeez.
we didn't even get Cognizant. So we had to do the Monday qualifier following Mexico.
And that's technically
So,
with full status.
yeah, so it's been a really weird year. And honestly, the next three, we wouldn't have gotten Valspar, Houston, and Valero if it wasn't for the tour extending the fields. So
Wow.
before the first reshuffle, had they not extended fields, we would have got, actually, they extended Torrey Pines as well. So we would have got Amex, barely. We would have got Mexico and Puerto Rico leading up to the Masters. So we'd have got three starts had they not extended fields. So full status isn't necessarily full status because guys are playing. Why wouldn't you?
Yeah, it's
Top 50 is
valid.
too important.
It's just crazy that you can claim it's full status when you can't get into the majority of the events.
Yeah, and that's kind of been our argument. I mean, and you would think, I get it. The Korn Ferry guys played a full season. I don't expect winning Q School to go ahead of guys that play a full season, but winning should have some type of reward, and I don't think there's anything. You'd think maybe players or something, throw us a bone or something, but I mean, all you can do is go play good golf. It takes care of everything.
That it does. I mean, that does kind of come down to the bottom line where, hey, you go out, you dig it in the dirt, so to speak, like Tiger says, and you go out there and make your way. It's not like it's given to you, but man, it's just weird the entire setup and all the changes that have been made because, like this year in particular, like you said, last year would have been in all these events, like this, like Sony, like Waste Management Open, and now this year it's like can't even get in to those events having full status. And I was talking with Lance Bennett about that on the podcast a couple months ago when he was on Austin Smotherman's bag before ultimately taking Tiger Woods's bag, which he's out there at Sawgrass. This week, as we're recording this during the Players Championship week. But you got a little story about Mr. Lance Bennett, which he was giving you some shit down there in Mexico this year at the Mexico Open. And I want to hear a little bit about that.
Well, not necessarily any shit this year in Mexico. So one of the first
Or was that last
jobs that
year?
I no, it was working for Johnson. It was like the third event I'd ever
Okay.
caddied. So honestly, like I'll first to admit, I had no idea etiquette stuff as caddy goes. So we're on the ninth hole at Wells Fargo, my home tournament basically, and we're playing with Mav McNealy, and at the time Lance is with Scott Harrington.
Okay.
And both of them hit in the bunker on nine, greenside. I clean Johnson's ball. I go to the back, lay the bag down, grab the flag. And both of them come out of the bunker. And the courtesy is to, hey, your guys on the green, clean, either rake the bunker or clean the balls on the green. Well, I'm not paying attention at all. I have no idea I'm supposed to do that. And Lance is like, hey, Dave, we need your help here. And I'm like, what the fuck did I do? I got no idea. And Johnson is as good as he is, will stick up for anybody as we're walking off. He's as nice as can be, but he's like, Lance, what was that? He's like, we clean the balls. He needs to help out here. And for the longest time, I was like, man, that guy hates me. I'm never gonna get along with that guy. He hates me. And then the next year at Mexico, where we play the little caddy par three, and Lance is paired with me, and we've gotten along since. It's been a cool relationship. I mean, somebody had to tell me. I'm a rookie. I know nothing,
No,
and the
you gotta
veteran's got to say
find
something.
your way, right? Yeah, I mean,
Yeah.
that's what's cool about it is like I know Lance through, he's been on multiple times and good dude, but he is somebody that will bust your balls a little bit about
Absolutely.
stuff like that, which that's great though that like there's some guys and I've heard this through the grapevine and so forth that there's some guys that like literally will hold a grudge over something as small as that. And it's cool to see that like having a veteran caddy kind of busting your balls a little bit, showing you the way, is it's a cool thing for them to do. And at the same time, it's also probably a little bit of fun for them too, just to be like, hey, rookie caddy, help
Yeah,
out here,
absolutely.
bud.
It's the same thing too with players. You see a rookie player doing something that is kind of frowned upon. These old or somewhat grumpy, they're going to tell you how it is. They're like, hey, this is not how things operate here. But you're not going to learn if nobody tells you.
Exactly. That's why I love that story from you about Lance. And I didn't. What's funny is you and I were chit-chatting about it beforehand, and I'm like, I didn't realize that this goes back to the Johnson Wagner days, which makes a lot more sense now because I'm like, okay, that's
Yeah.
you're very new at that point, and you're coming
Yeah.
in caddying on tour. I mean, I can't imagine. I was actually talking about this with a buddy of mine who he caddied on the DP World Tour for a couple events, and I'm just like, man, what is it like? Because I interview PGA Tour caddies. I've thought about caddying for guys before, and I'm just like, I just haven't really done it. I've done it at the amateur ranks, and I'm like, I wouldn't even know where to begin, even though I've played. I'm like, and I like the math is what scares me the most of like trying to pace out yardages and be like trying to do a math equation here. I'm like, yeah, no, I don't think I could do that. Is there ever a time where you have just been stuck and you're like, wait a second, am I giving him the right number right now?
I do it every round. I mean, I think you need to sub in for me one time because so my guy is in meters, but he doesn't use a meters book. So we use a yards book. So I pace off the yards. I give him the number. I convert it to meters. He has a chart, but I've got it memorized at this point. So for example, like 162 front, I know is 147 meters. So I'll tell him the number and I have to wait for him to come through and check his chart. So yeah, I mean, every time I give him a number, I go like he'll be going through his routine. I open the book real quick and I'm like, all right, I think I got it right. Okay, I got it right.
All right, if I'm
So
ever going to sub in, just make sure it's a non-important event.
yeah, get ready to do some conversions.
So, and that, see, I don't know if I could do that. I'm just, I don't, I might need like my iPhone to be like, hey Siri, can you go ahead and convert this for me to meters, please? Like, and you can't use a cell phone, right?
No,
Yeah,
I
I
mean,
didn't think
I
so.
don't think so.
Yeah, I don't
That's
either.
why, I mean, he's got a little cheat sheet in his book, so it helps him, but I never got that. I know the first week I worked for him, I was in the hotel with whiteout and a marker changing every number in the book because he wouldn't let me use a meters book. So I was like, I'm not going to mess this up this week. And fortunately, I have not done that since because I think I've got the conversions down.
See, Bobby Brown was good because he first he was caddying for Siwoo, then he caddied for Sung Jae, and by the time that he recently was caddying for SH Kim, he does everything in meters now. So like I couldn't even talk to him. We were out there at the Shriners, and I was walking with him in SH, and I kept looking at the Foresight launch monitor that I kept putting down for SH, and I'm like,
Man, he's in
what
his
the hell are
short.
these numbers? I'm like, yeah, it didn't hit me till probably at least 7 holes in that it was in meters. I completely forgot. And I'm just looking at him, I'm like, man, he's hitting it really short, but it seems to be going a long way. I'm like, what's going on here?
And
So,
on the same
yeah.
thing, like on par three tees when everybody's around and I'll spit out numbers and he'll spit them back and oh, so we carry at 162 and guys that don't know he's in meters will look over like, damn, he's way off. And it's like, nah, we're in meters. So he'll tell me, like, hey, just so you know, we're in meters. Don't get confused.
Well, and now it actually makes even more sense that I'm thinking back to the Foresight deal and Kevin Streelman. We ended up catching up with him on the 10th or 11th hole, or on the 10th hole. We started playing the practice round with him, and sure enough, he's like, "Hey, can you leave that down for me? Is it okay if I hit a couple shots and see my numbers on Foresight?" And he kept looking down with a little bit weird of a look, and I'm like, it didn't dawn on me until we were just talking about this. I don't know why, but now I understand why he had a confused look on his face. But
Yeah, he's probably like, damn, I'm hitting it short all of a sudden. What happened?
exactly. Now, we do have a special Swanee segment here on the show. Now, a quick word from our sponsor. Swanee's is here with a fresh take. Performance-based materials are a given these days. But if you're looking for the stretchiest and most lightweight pieces that deliver a look that says, I'm here for a good time, take a walk on the Swanee side. With fabric sourced from recycled plastics and designs sourced from our very own weekend warriors, Swannies is looking out for both our planet and those that need a little style to boost their drive another 15 yards. Premium looks from top to bottom at swannies.co. This is where we go over a little bit of style action. And I can already tell via the rope hat you got on, you got some style. You got the flow going too, which is great. Now, and I'm jealous of that because I used to have it in college. My wife won't allow me to grow it back out. She's like, you don't wear hats enough. And I'm like, honey, this is all I do. I wear hats all the time now. She's like, absolutely not. So I'm jealous, but what kind of style are you rocking out there as a caddy? So some guys, they like to rock the Jordans. Others are Nike Air Max 90 type of guys. Like, where do you fall within the style? And I mean, I'm starting with sneakers, but you can go anywhere with this.
We'll start sneakers. I typically wear the little high top on clouds. They're not necessarily for walking, but to me, they look good. So that's my go-to shoe. I try to wear whatever Harrison wears as far as brand goes. So right now he's Bad Birdie, but if I can wear a hoodie, I'm going to wear a hoodie. I mean, it's, even if it's borderline too hot, I'm still going to wear a hoodie and always a rope hat. So yeah. The hat I've got on now, it's a Charlotte beer shop that I go to, been frequenting for almost 15 years now, but since I couldn't get paid to wear Valspar at Q school, this was the hat I rocked all week. And the guy that runs the place knows zero about golf, and he had the golf going all week at Q school because of the hat. So I have to give him a little shout out.
That's so dope. I love that. Just represent the local brands, man. I
absolutely.
And I complimented you on that hat before we hopped on this podcast recording, and I'm like, dude, dope hat. Like, that is, it's a sick hat. Yeah, man. So you got the clouds going. You got to have a rope hat. I get that, because you got the flow going on with it. And a hoodie. So, I feel like I would be doing the same thing other than the flow. Now, what is your take on caddies with separate clothing deals from their player? So this is kind of a new thing going on right now. Willie Wilcox being one of them with, he's Melbourne and, his guy Sungjae is a Titleist guy, a FootJoy. And, you know, I wonder, is there a conflict there? Like, what are you hearing from inside the ropes? Anything?
I don't think there's a conflict unless it's written in the player's contract that the caddy has to wear what they wear, which, I mean, not to be greedy, but if the player has that in their contract, I'd be kind of asking to at least be compensated a little bit. Yeah.
Give me some money, baby.
But if you're not required to wear it, then, I mean, why wouldn't you take a little bit extra money? I mean, it's just, why not? I just don't see any reason not to. Now, if the player obviously says, hey, I don't think you should, this is what I think you should wear, I mean, you could maybe have an argument with them and ask for more money, but I just think you kind of have to say, yeah, sounds good, boss. Let's, I'll stick with whatever I need to do.
I think that's where this is all heading. Yeah, I think this is where it's all heading, where caddies are, and they've been overlooked for so long. And now it's finally, and we'll get into LIV Golf in a little bit, but it's partially because of how LIV started taking care of caddies and word started getting back to some of the guys on tour. And then it's like, okay. Then all of a sudden, I noticed that through talking with guys that PGA Tour really stepped up their game when it came to caddies, and you guys are starting to be looked at more and more so as a staple, as part of the team.
Yeah.
Not so much as, oh, you know what, I've picked up this caddy in the parking lot today because he was out there hustling, or knows the golf course. It's like you guys are building teams now, and that has become a very important thing. So it makes more and more sense that caddies get a little bit more showtime in terms of being on air where you're mic'd up, per se, having those conversations with the player, and then also getting some brand deals as well. I think that's where everything is starting to head. That's why I want to ask you, I'm like, are you hearing anything around that from inside the ropes? Are guys pissed off about it? Are guys excited about it? That's the type of stuff that, you know, a lot of people don't hear about. So it's cool that you know, you've got that take on it.
I wouldn't think anybody would really be mad about it. If they are, then that's shows who they are more than anything. But
a lot of jealousy, I mean, like out you, there, David.
Yeah, but like you said, I mean, the caddy's on. If your guy's in contention, the caddy's on TV a lot. I mean, it helps these companies too. Like, why wouldn't you pay somebody to wear your hat or a logo on the sleeve that you could see instead of the bib? And I mean, and as you mentioned too, the team talking, if you talk to a lot of veteran guys back in the day, it was more, hey, I'll be there at 6 o'clock. I'll see you at six. You play your round of golf. Hey, see you tomorrow at six. And that was the end of the day. Now, like, guys are close. Like, when I worked for Johnson, me and him are really close friends. We've been friends for a decade. And basically he told me before we started, he's like, hey, we're not staying together. We might do dinner once a week. That's just the way it is. And now with Harrison, like, I didn't know, I met him the first time the week I caddied for him. And I bet you we do dinner six nights a week. Cause it's when we finish, it's like, hey, what do you want to do for dinner?
Yeah.
So, I mean, I think the, how close guys are with their caddies has changed significantly in the last 5 even to 20 years.
Couldn't agree more. And I think they've seen success too from previous caddies that have been super close with their players and had great success because of it, and kind of leaning on the caddy sometimes for practice routines and things along those lines as well. So I do want to ask you real quick in regards to that. I know it wasn't on our show notes, but it just popped the question into my head. How do you go about, kind of, when you go to approach a golf course, is there anything that you're doing for Harrison that you're like, hey man, this is what we should be looking at? Or are you kind of letting him do his thing? I know a lot of guys spend a ton of time around the greens during the practice rounds.
So he does, I let him do most of his own stuff as far as, cause he see, the guy is unbelievably talented. He sees some shots that I just don't see, but on the other side, there's some shots that I feel like he's so good. Like, you have to have this shot. Cause I have this shot. But then on the golf course, like doing prep work, my biggest thing is just finding are there holes where short side's better than not? That's my biggest thing, because most of the time, at least with him, you're playing to the fat part of the green and just conservatively aggressive. And if we can find a hole that doesn't necessarily seem like we need to go at it, but we know that short side's okay, that's huge for me. I want to know where the short side good misses are.
Love that.
Just get a little bit more aggressive on some what seemingly tucked flags.
Yeah, makes sense. Now, I'm going to put you on the caddy hot seat, so take a good swig of that, because this is where it's going to get tense. All right, these are going to be rapid-fire questions here for you. Toughest bag you've had to date? It doesn't even have to be a pro.
Toughest bag? Oh, man. I actually caddied yesterday at Quail Hollow, and I mean, these guys they're 25 handicaps, and they would argue with every single read. And yesterday, there was one in particular, I don't know if you're familiar with Quail, the 14th hole.
Oh, yeah.
Drivable par four. Green is going hard to the water. This guy hits his fourth shot, 15 feet past. He's like, this goes left, right? And I said, no, it's a foot right to left. This goes right? And I'm like, dude, I've played here 1,000 times. I've caddied here 1,000 times. It goes right. And he couldn't get it out of his head. And on the next hole, he drives it in the water. Then I'm four caddying ahead. He said, that go in the water? Yes, it went in the water. Are you sure? Did you see it go in the water? I'm like, nah, I'm lying to you, bud. Those are the toughest bags. Pros are easy.
That's incredible. And you're spot on. I caddied when I played college golf for some money. Used to caddy at Silverleaf out here in Scottsdale, and then also at Arizona Country Club. And yeah, there were those guys that were just like, are you sure? Because, you know, they've got that ego to where they're just like, I don't see that. That's not going to do that. And you're like, all right, just don't trust me. Hit it your way and let's see the ball miss. And then sure enough. And then they're like, all right, I'm going to start listening to you. And then they still have a tough time not coming through and listening to you at all. But it's like, yeah, it's just – so that sounds like a rough day yesterday. Glad to have you yesterday and not with your player.
Well, I'm very accommodating when I'm there because they've been so good to me. I can go out there and practice and play. And I was actually practicing yesterday, and I was on the putting green, and my old boss comes. He's like, "Hey, we're short a caddy. Can you caddy?" I'm like, "Absolutely. Like, I'll jump in there." They're
That
too
is
good to me, so I have to
awesome.
be accommodating.
Love that. Now, what's the hardest thing about caddying on the PGA Tour? And you cannot say converting to to the
No,
metric system.
that's easy. That's easy stuff. To me, it's when it's not going well, not showing emotion, not being able to, like, when I have a caddy and I'm playing bad, I don't mind if you give me shit and tell me, "Hey, let's go." Some guys, like, you just leave them alone, like let them sulk. I mean, that's the hardest part. You can't always say what you want to say, especially at the pro level where you say the wrong thing, it might be the last week you work. So,
I've heard a few of those stories. Yeah,
it's not,
that
yeah,
does
that's the hardest
happen.
part.
Okay, all right. Yeah, adaptability. Gotta know your player. All right, what
Yep.
advice would you give to someone looking to become a caddy on the PGA Tour?
Man, I think Aaron Fleener touched on it one time on a podcast. I mean, you got to grind. You just got to, whether it means go chase Monday qualifiers or go to a Korn Ferry event and stand in the parking lot. I know you're going to lose money, but I mean, that, unless you know somebody, I was very fortunate and I did, but I see that as, obviously the best avenue is knowing somebody. But if you really want it, you have to go, you have to chase it. I mean, it's just like playing, you have to chase it.
Good
And if you
answer.
don't, you just, and you see guys that have been doing it for 10 years, the same guys, they chase the Mondays, and they're eventually going to get their break. You hope, but you got to grind.
Gotta grind. Gotta put in the hard work. What's the toughest day of the week for a caddy on the PGA Tour?
Ooh, probably a Monday pro-am because it's usually a 5.5 hour day. You're there all day. You want to do prep work too. I would say Monday.
Monday. Okay.
Especially, I mean, if your guy's playing the Monday pro-am, it typically means you missed the cut the previous week and or you are rushing to get to that spot. So, I mean, it's just you're already tired and then you're dealing with 5.5 hours on the golf course. And really, in the pro-am, you're just staying out. The caddy's staying out of the way. Let the pro entertain. And if you can entertain as a caddy, great. And it's more a better experience for the players. But yeah, it's a grind on Monday.
Okay. All right. And is there a particular tournament or golf course you haven't yet worked but hope to in the future?
I've never been to Waste Management. I think that would be up there.
Wow. No, no waste management, huh? This year was a
Obviously,
debacle, but
that's what I heard. Obviously, any of the majors are going to be at the top of the list. I mean, an Open Championship would be incredible. Any of the Open Championships, I don't care what venue.
I'm with you on that. I would actually, because I haven't been over, and I've got one of my best friends. He grew up at St. Andrews, like literally like 5 minutes up the street, got his PGA card through St. Andrews, and I still haven't yet to go over there, but I could only imagine the Open Championship at St. Andrews. It would just be
Yeah,
insane.
I agree. So we played Scottish Open this year, and we stayed right there in North Berwick, and I got fortunate to play North Berwick, which is quickly in the top three that I've ever played. It was awesome. And then after we missed the cut, so we went over to St. Andrews. I have a buddy as well that he's the head pro at Glen Eagles,
Okay, yeah,
and
not a bad spot.
we didn't get to play the old course, but we played Jubilee, and we got a perfect Scottish day. It was blowing 35 and nasty. And I fell in love
Love that
with that
you
place.
called that a perfect day. Perfect Scottish day. Blowing hard, 30
Yeah.
miles an hour. Perfect.
It was good.
That is
But I fell in love with
unreal.
Scotland.
Scott, man, I fell in love with Ireland when I went over to Ireland and played along the coastline. That was
Yeah.
insane too. I think Ireland's underrated in terms of the golf that is over there, but at the same time, I haven't been to Scotland. Forgive me for saying that. So I know everybody. I got to get over there. I got to play. But let's get into a little that you made it through the caddy hot seat. And I mean, the answers were flawless, so well done there. But now we got to get into a little bit of the hot topic, which has been going on for the past couple of years. If you're not exhausted by this yet, folks, then yeah, we're just going to keep riding it until it dies. But LIV Golf, now a lot, obviously I've spoken with a lot of caddies, and there's a lot of big opinions around LIV Golf. And by the way, I've got some caddy friends that, you know, have been on the program that are over in LIV Golf that share quite a bit of information as well. But that being said, where do you stand? And this can just be a general opinion on LIV Golf.
I'm happy to dive in. I mean, I've never been a fan of LIV Golf, the format, anything about it. I'm a huge golf nut. I love watching golf. I've turned LIV on a couple times. I just don't like the 54 hole shotgun. It's just, it reminds me of junior golf, all honesty. On the other end of that,
fair.
I don't knock any player that takes money to go play golf. It's hard to knock. And I'm friends with Harold Varner. I've grown up with him, and I don't knock his decision. I mean, you do what's best for you, and it's just, that's what it is. But my biggest gripe, and I've talked to you about it, the LIV fans on Twitter, and I've had to delete my personal one that I just can't do it because I get too heated. But at the end of the day, you just got to know they're not real people. They just want to watch the world burn.
Oh, it's so true. It's so true. It's one of my pet peeves. And then, you know, a lot of them got on me not that long ago because they're like, well, the PGA Tour fanboys they also call pro PGA Tour accounts PGA Tour only fans. I'm like, you know, at least they know what they're talking about, though. Like, that's my problem with the LIV Golf accounts, is that they're delusionally bad. Like, they just don't, so often, they're just so off in terms of their knowledge around the game of golf. It's like, okay, if you're going to be a burner account, if you're going to be a hater, if you're going to be a bot for one of these brands, like, you got to know your shit. And that's my biggest argument with those accounts. They don't know golf.
And I ran into one recently that he didn't even know what match play was. It's like,
that's insane.
Yeah. I mean, it's like, you're not a golf fan. You're just, you see this new product, and if growing the game is the goal, you've created some new fans. They've, albeit some interesting ones. But back to, I gave it a ton, Anthony Kim's first week. I mean, I watched, as I know you did as well. I mean, Anthony Kim's like a blast from my past. Like, I remember his first week at Quail.
It's a myth. It's a magical myth.
Yeah. So, I mean, I tuned in for all 3 days, and honestly, their telecast is great. I mean, they show golf.
They do a good job with the broad. But let me stop you there, because I've watched it from the very beginning, and I used to have to mute it because the broadcast team was so bad. Then Faraday came in. I started listening a little bit, but he was the only one that was like staying true to himself. Like Jerry Fultz, and granted, I'll give what's his face. I can't think of his damn name off the top of my head. The soccer broadcaster. He's actually on Ted Lasso, which when I pointed this out to Bobby, it just threw him for a goddamn loop. He just couldn't process the fact that is it Arlo? There's Don Boulay, which he's the on-course guy now. They moved him out of the booth when Faraday came in. That had to be a tough, demotion. And then all of a sudden, you've got Arlo White, I believe his name is. I will have to fact-check myself after this. But he's a soccer guy, so he didn't know what he was doing necessarily. Jerry Fultz has been around for a long time. A lot of people don't like him in the industry, which I don't have an opinion either way on him. And then Faraday comes in, and like, but they were so over the top with everything. Like, you could tell that everybody it was all propaganda, and it drove me nuts. I had to mute it, and I was just watching golf. And for a while there, it was like watching TikTok, just boom, 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 shot after shot, after shot, after shot. You're like, holy shit, I have no idea what's going on. My wife, my wife jumps in for a second, like she's seeing me watch this, and I'm just like shook. And she's like, holy shit, this is fast paced, huh? And I was like, hon, This is something else. And then sure enough, now that they're in their third season, they've dropped a lot of the propaganda. Granted, they promote the shit out of that podcast, Fairway to Heaven. Yeah. I'll never forget the goddamn name because I've seen it 97,000 times within the first tournament, let alone now we're four tournaments deep. But yeah, it was cool to see Anthony Kim come back. So good for him. But yeah, let's get back to just the broad. So you like the broadcast? Do you think the broadcast?
I don't mind it. I mean, I hate the scoreboard on the side. Just if you're a casual golf fan, there's no way you know what these names are, and that's my biggest complaint. Like, fortunately, I follow golf and I know golf, and I can figure it out. But the first time I watched it, and you had some of these Asian players with longer names, and it was abbreviated to four letters. So I'm like, I have no idea who that is.
And then they're throwing in the team logo next to him, and it's like, who is this guy? Yeah, you actually have to, like, seriously follow it to know what the hell's going on with that side leaderboard. My biggest issue is the goddamn putting line. Can we get rid of the live line?
That thing's atrocious. We agree on that one.
It's awful.
Never right, and it's in the way.
Yeah, I can't watch
it. It's so
it.
Gaudy, you can't see the putt. Yeah, exactly.
Unbelievable. Do you think that there's going to be a merger?
I got to believe at some point. I mean, I know it's all speculative, but I mean, everyone keeps talking about needing the PIF funding, but I mean, and if you don't, I think they just pick off more players. Well, I mean, they've shown they don't care about spending money. They had this budget initially, $3 million is what I read every day, and they're pretty damn close to that.
Or $3 billion, so you mean?
Yeah, $3 billion. So if you add up like player contracts on assumed player contracts, they've surpassed $2 billion paying players.
Oh yeah, I mean Rom got the bag with 600. Shit, and then their next target, you know their next target's got to be Rory, and
Rory or
in
Victor.
Order to get Rory, it would be a bill. You got to give Rory $1 billion, and that would just throw him way over the top. So it's like, why not? Their entire purpose for this entire thing was that they wanted to be involved in the PGA Tour and involved at the top level for golf. So I feel like the deal is imminent. When the Waste Management came around, they were actually really close to finalizing, from what I was told from my sources, and multiple. So it wasn't just like one agent or one person familiar with the situation. I had multiple people telling me, hey, this might actually close this week, because they kind of want to like tuck it under the news of the Super Bowl and everything and have it not be this massive ordeal, even though they kind of knew that it would be. But the one thing that always kind of stuck out was that the pathway back for the players and what that would look like, what the fines would be, everything like that, to come back and play on the PGA Tour. But now I'm getting a lot of information, and I don't know whether to trust it or not, because this is coming from the Twitter spheres of the pro PGA Tour accounts, talking about the fact that Liv's going away in this deal. That the PGA Tour is stuck in, like, that's the one thing that they're requiring, is that Liv goes away and that golf comes back as one.
Yeah. And I mean, I could see that happening, but it not being Liv, it being something along with the PGA Tour Enterprises and still similar concept, but called something else. I don't know. I really don't know. I mean, I feel like what you also read is Yasir loves his Liv as his baby. So
I know that's where, like, it to me, that's surprising that Liv would just go away, because Yasir kind of removed Liv from the negotiations there for a while, which that led to SSG, the Strategic Sports Group, coming in, giving three bills to the PGA Tour saying, okay, we don't necessarily need you. Piff getting pissed off, going and getting John Rahm. And then it's like, all right, well, where is all of this leverage and negotiation right now? So I think your guess is as good as mine at this point, where, I don't think we really know at this point in time. I know they want it to be done before the Masters, because they don't want that to be the overarching theme to the Masters. But it's kind of seeming like it's going to go on for a little bit longer.
And back to the pathway back, I mean, obviously, tournament sponsors, if there's if John Rahm's coming back, Bryson, Koepka, DJ, those sponsors are going to want them in their events. So I feel like the pathway back has to involve fines, not necessarily suspensions, because how are you going to tell Waste Management, no, John Rahm wants to play, but we suspended him. He can't come.
Yeah,
I mean,
that's a good
you're going to
point.
lose sponsors there too, in my opinion. But also, you have to look after the guys that are fully exempt. Now you're going to say, I mean, what we talked about earlier, my guy's struggling to get in. So you bring, let's say, 20 of those guys back, 10 of those guys back, that moves 10 more spots down where you have no chance.
It's complicated. You know
Yeah.
what I mean? It's like, this is not an easy situation at all. What are we going to have? 180 guys playing in an event next year? Like, this is going to be a really complicated situation. And then you got the LIV Golf contracts, which a lot of people are saying that, you know, those won't go through employment. Like, they're not legal employment contracts here in the United States. Like, they'd never fly because they're under a lot of, like, they're very controlled in terms of the
Yeah.
contracts from what I've read and what I've seen. And I'm like, shoot, I'm about to have two LIV Golf guys come onto this podcast. And I'm like, I'm kind of worried as to what can I ask them? What can I not? So that's going to be a fun one.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, obviously, they are not obviously, I mean, speculative again, but they all speak so highly. I mean, you got to believe that they're told they can't say certain things in interviews, so.
That is true. And we've seen it, right? But I don't know how long they're so, because it also falls on the team owner, technically, which is the captains right now. So the captains, technically, I guess, can say what they want once they get beyond the signing period. Like, I've noticed that with the signing period. The first, like, month or two, they, like, John, for instance, John Rahm,
Yeah.
he had to, and I know a lot of people around John. So this one I've seen close to home. Where it really was, he had to not do any media, and everything that was media driven was from Liv, and he had to say
Yeah.
certain things.
Yeah, and then go keep going.
Oh no, I was just gonna say, so there's that.
Well, and then on the back to the contract thing is once these contracts expire, are they gonna dump out it like say John Rahm, I don't know what his contract is, but say it's 600 million 3 years and 3 years expires.
So
What if he
the
wants, what
longest ones
if
are 3 years.
so at the end of 3 years, are they just gonna, hey, I made 600 million the last 3 years, I'm still productive, just like a baseball and NBA player. I want more. I want this next contract, I want 650 for 3 years.
That's a tough thing for Liv because DJ's contract is coming up at the end of the year,
Yep.
which DJ got over 100. Brooks is coming up, which is over 100. Phil, do you re-sign Phil Mickelson, who's basically been like your brand ambassador, so to speak, good, bad, or otherwise? I mean, depending on how you look at that whole situation. So there's so many guys. Bryson is going to be coming up. It's just that is a tough scenario to where, yeah, these guys don't have a place to go as of right now because they're not coming back onto the PGA Tour unless the tour sets up some type of fine system. The only precedent we have right now in regards to fines is the DP World Tour.
Yep. I guess, who was it? Wiesberger paid a ton to go back.
So it was Wiesberger, and then the other one was, oh God, why am I blanking? It was what comes to mind is Richard Bland, but he's still playing. He
I
was
should know
one.
who it is because we played two
Gosh.
DP World events last month and I saw the player you're thinking of. I should know who it is.
It is, hang on, I'm gonna pull it up real quick. So LIV Golfer back on DP World Tour. So Burned is the one that really went back full force, and then there is Cantor. Maury
Laura.
Cantor went back as well.
Yeah, and then you had like
Which
a couple tournament guys like Henny Duplessis, and there's some other guys that I saw there that I know played a little bit of LIV. What's the other one? The Spanish guy. He likes to pump LIV a lot on Twitter.
Oh gosh, who is it? You got me on that one.
Pablo Larrazabal.
Oh yeah. Well done there. Yeah, I wouldn't have gone. Yeah, and I know what you're talking about now too. I'm like, my brain wasn't even going there, but yeah, you nailed it. You're on top of this stuff.
He's one that's it's like he was trying so hard to be a John Rahm team member.
He was definitely campaigning for that money. He's
absolutely
like,
campaigning.
Would love to come over, love to get paid a lot of money, love to be on John's team. Would love it. They're just like, sorry, Pablo. It's not working out.
Pablo, John we got some up-and-comers.
we're actually going with Caleb Surratt.
I kept telling people on my personal account before I deleted it, was like, it's going to be Pablo Larrazabal and Rafa Cabrera Bello, and that's going to be your main three on John Rahm's team.
You know, I think they actually missed the boat with Rafa.
Victor Hovland.
Rafa would have been
playing
great.
Good golf.
Yeah.
And he's playing good golf again.
I completely agree.
I mean, Caleb Surratt's a very good player, and he'll make a ton of money doing it. And I think he was the easy decision. I mean, what, 2 years from now, he's not suspended from the PGA Tour, is he? Because he's never a member.
Never a member.
And he's going to be 22 years old with however many millions in his bank account.
Yeah. So there's something to be said for the young guys that have gone over. That might have been a pretty smart move for them to get established, to get some money in the bank. And, you know, I don't think it really hurt them all that much. Now, Rahm definitely was on the side of, hey, this is all going to get merged together anyways, so let me take my money now, and then I'll say my sorries and everything coming back over. That hasn't necessarily worked out for him yet, and I think he's a little bit nervous in regards to whether or not that's going to happen. Like, his tone has changed.
Yeah, and, I mean, I guess when you're John Rahm, you're a big enough name where, I mean, almost calling the PGA Tour's bluff, I don't know. Like, are you really going to suspend me? And now I've got $600 million in the bank. What are you going to find me that's going to hurt me?
It does make you wonder, like, what is that fine going to be for these guys to come back over? Then you got guys like Dustin Johnson, Cam Smith. These guys are just living the dream. Don't care.
Yeah.
They don't care to play golf anymore. They're like, yeah, cool. I've played golf. I've made money. I'm going to be on my yacht or with Cam. He's going to be in his Lamborghini. Most people don't realize Cam Smith owns a Lamborghini, folks. Like,
and he loves to fish.
And loves to fish.
Somebody, Harrison, was telling me that the year that he finished second at Augusta, his week prep leading up to Augusta, he heard about big fish in a certain pond and just went and fished for a week. And then finished second.
That is not surprising at all. I personally think that Dustin Johnson and Cam Smith should have a fishing show.
Just fully pivot from golf and go to fishing.
Just the two of them going out, you know, they're going to get sponsored by Bass Sports Shops, and they're going to go out on DJ's yacht, and they're going to go catch some marlins, and they're just going to film the whole thing and have those two. I mean, imagine the conversations. Probably not that many.
No. They just keep going up the coast of Florida from Palm Beach to Jacksonville and just have a time.
Oh, man. Well, David, I appreciate your time, man. Appreciate you coming on the Pull Hook Golf Podcast. And
absolutely. Once
again, this may be the first of many appearances from you. So I definitely appreciate you coming on. We got your story as to how you got started in the game of golf, ended up getting into being a PGA Tour caddy. And then we got into your player, Harrison Endicott. We got into some stories. We got into some style. Got into the caddy hot seat that you absolutely crushed. Got into some live golf. Oh, man. So next time that you come on, we might have to talk a little bit of shop here and talk a little bit about the current events going on with, you know, giving golf tournaments and so forth. But, again, I want to thank you. I want to thank our sponsors, Swanee's Golf, Once again, folks, use promo code PULLHOOKGOLF25 at checkout for 25% off your entire order at swannies.co. I've been repping it the entire episode, and pretty much every episode that I have done over the past year, year and a half has been all decked out with Swannies. So I want to thank them. And here it is, folks.